There's a word that appears in our Bible, and I know it's a word that's familiar to you, a word that appears in our Bible over and over again from the Old Testament and the New Testament some 50 times. But it's a word that we are familiar with and we hear it a lot, but I'm not certain it is a word that we really reflect on a lot, and it is the word godly, or sometimes it's in the form godliness, but some 50 times throughout the Bible. We see that word, and you hear that word thrown around often. And when you pay attention to the things that are said about godliness, there is a very obvious importance to the idea of being godly. For instance, in Titus chapter 2, where Paul writes there to Titus, he says, "The grace of God has appeared, and grace teaches us some things. Among other things," he says, "it teaches us to live godly lives." Paul talks about godliness. That's more profitable than physical exercise. He says godliness is profitable for all things. If you were to just go through the Psalms, you'd find that word godly pretty regular. And it would say things like, God preserves the souls of the godly. He doesn't forsake the godly. He hears the godly. Or he takes the godly and he sets them apart for himself. Peter would write some about godliness. There's a long list of virtues that we should have in 2 Peter 1, and godliness is one of those. And then he eventually says that in view of the fact that one day this world is going to be destroyed and you and I are going to be judged, he said in view of that you ought to live godly lives. And so just a brief survey of how that word is used and where it appears says that there's a very obvious importance to being godly. Now, to think about what that word means, and to some, maybe the understanding is that it means to be like God. And certainly I think that would be included, and we know biblically that I'm supposed to reflect the image of God. And so to be like God may be an inclusion in that, but I think it goes beyond that. Rather, I think what godly really means is that we have a life that is characterized by our loyalty to God. I think that's ultimately what it would mean to be godly. It is to have a life that is characterized by loyalty to God. We might could say it is a life that is God-centered, or a life that is God-oriented. And I think there's a passage that kind of helps me see godliness in real life. James, at least, is giving some scenarios at the end of his epistle, James chapter 5, there in verses 13 and 14. James gives some scenarios. And he says in that scenario, is anyone suffering, then he should do what? He needs to pray. And if you're happy, do what? Sing. And if you're suffering, then you need to call for the elders, and they can pray for you, and they can be of help to you. And so I think you see a theme there. As James presents the good and the bad of life, he says God is the appropriate response to both of those things, or all of those things. And so you see a life that maybe has God at its center. And you start thinking about, all right, well, godliness is super important, and we know what godliness looks like. Then how do we promote godliness? And I think there are several ways to do that. I would suggest you just read your Bible. I mean, if my life is centered around God, then what's really important? It's really important to know what God says about all these different things in life. And so reading the Bible would promote godliness. I suggest that devoting time to God, don't know why I didn't capitalize the G there, but it should be. But we devote time to God. Just like we're here this morning, giving ourselves to God. And hopefully we're not here out of habit. Hopefully we're here because we're godly people. But what I hope you recognize is there are going to be some things that go on here that promote godliness. Maybe since the last time we were here, we kind of get our life a little off center, and devoting our time to God maybe brings us back. Prayer is a way that we can have this godliness. James also says, if you're lacking wisdom, do what? Ask of God. And so again, you see this idea of seeking God for help in life. And then adversity. And adversity, I think, is something that we wouldn't go out and seek, not like we would seek reading our Bible or praying or giving time to God. But I mentioned adversity is a way to promote godliness, because the Bible tells us that when we go through trials, maybe there's something that is a test of our faith. Maybe there's some circumstance in life, and I don't know how this circumstance, I don't know why it's come into my life, and I don't know how long it's going to last. I don't know how bad it's going to get. I don't know how all of it's going to end, but if I trust God, then I'll maintain faithfulness to Him. Well, you know what Scripture says about that? It says that when we pass one trial, it really equips us to pass the next trial. And so we can maybe see how godliness is affected by even the bad things that can happen in life. And so maybe there's more we could add to this list, but I want to move on to another aspect that we're going to focus on this morning. And I want to add to the list that it is other people in life that can help us with our godliness. I want to suggest to you that God giving us each other is one of the greatest gifts that He's given us. Can you just think about that for just a minute? Of all the things that God has given us, the gift of other people is one of the greatest gifts. There are things that you can easily recognize in the relationships that you have in this world. Think about your family. Think about some of your closest friends. How important are those relationships to you? How valuable is it to have people who are supportive of you and people that you can enjoy life with? And so we recognize the value of friendships. Now, this morning, we're not just going to talk about a family relationship, or we're not just going to talk about casual friends. You know, we can have casual friends for lots of different reasons, right? We may be casual friends just because we like the same sports teams, or we enjoy the same hobbies, or for some other reason. And that is not wrong. And I suggest I can have godly friendships with people who I also enjoy some of those other things with. But when we're talking about being godly friends, we are talking about a relationship that is rooted in the fact that both of us have godly lives. And so two things I want you to do with me this morning. What aren't you thinking about? I want you thinking about how I can be a godly friend, and I want you to think about the value of having a godly friend in your life. And so that's what we're going to be thinking about this morning. Now, maybe you already kind of see how this is tied into the scripture reading that we just had from 1 Samuel chapter 18. It is the story of David and Jonathan. And I go to that story for this lesson because I think David and Jonathan show us some real qualities of godly friendship. And they don't just show us the qualities, they show us the value. Now, I don't have time to really go deeply into their story, so maybe you have some familiarity with it, but I'll kind of give you the cliff notes, maybe in a very brief nutshell. And you've got David and Jonathan, unlikely friends, really. Remember, Saul was God's anointed king over all of Israel. But you might remember that Saul did not turn out to be the kind of king that God wanted him to be. And so God was going to remove the throne from Saul, and He was going to give it to David. And so you can imagine, encompassed in our reading there, you start to see some feelings as David begins to rise in popularity. You see Saul's anger towards him, and eventually Saul is trying to kill David. And then here's Jonathan. Should have been the heir to the throne, right? He's the son of the king. And Jonathan now, Saul's son, is kind of caught in the middle of what's going on with David and what's going on in his own family. And so, despite the odds, those two became friends. And again, I suggest they were an incredible help to each other. And so as you and I sit here today wanting to live godly lives, thinking about the help that we can get from each other, I want us to just dig into their story just a little bit. You can have your Bible open to 1 Samuel Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. We'll make some observations from there to start with as we start thinking about the qualities. Let me just go ahead and give you the first one. For us to be the kind of friend that God wants us to be, the kind of friend that is helpful to other people, we need to be faithful. I suggest that we see that maybe in David most easily. I don't know if there's anybody that doesn't know something about the story of David and Goliath. But remember, David was too young to go out to battle. David was left at home with his father just tending the sheep. And there comes a time where his father sends him out to the brothers who were in battle with the Philistines. And he says, take them these supplies. But essentially, he's doing a welfare check. He's supposed to come back home and report to dad how the brothers are doing. But you remember, there wasn't much of a battle going on because you've got Israel on one mountain and you've got the Philistines on another mountain. And there's the valley in between, and there wasn't a whole lot of fighting going on. And you know why? Because the Philistines had trotted out their champion, the giant Goliath. And he's issuing this challenge. If anybody can beat me, then we'll serve you. And you know what all of Saul's army was doing? They were cowering in fear, weren't they? They were afraid to step up and take the challenge. And so as David gets there, you know what David sees? He sees all of this challenge and all this fear. And David thinks way differently than everybody else does. David immediately starts thinking about God. I want you to notice there in 1 Samuel chapter 17 in verse 26, what David immediately thinks of when he gets there. He says, David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? You see, when David arrived on the scene, what did he immediately start thinking about? He immediately started thinking, God is involved in this. And then, of course, beyond that, notice a few verses later in verse 37. As he's now talking to Saul, Saul's going to try to discourage him from fighting. You're not prepared. You don't have the armor. You don't have the experience. But he says, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And so Saul says to him, go, may the Lord be with you. And so David is again reflecting on his faith in God and then dropping down a few more verses in verse 45, when David gets there in front of Goliath. And this is what he says to him. David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. And I'll give the dead bodies of the armies of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. I want you to know, everybody else in Saul's army is standing around. They're making God look bad, aren't they? If you're a Philistine watching all of this, would you ever be drawn to the God of heaven? I don't think so. Because here are God's people. They're cowering in fear. They're just allowing God to be profaned and essentially made fun of. And then David says, you will know that there is a God. And then notice what he says. And all the assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. Do you see a theme there with David? David is exhibiting that godliness. He's thinking about God, not as a last resort, but he's counting on God. And so there is a real trust in God. And I want to suggest that we see the same thing back a few chapters before in 1 Samuel chapter 14. In 1 Samuel chapter 14, this is a battle that we don't know hardly anything about. But I want to suggest to you, this is an incredible testimony to the godliness and the faithfulness of Jonathan. Not to read all of the story, but to just mention, this is very, very similar to David and Goliath. Here the Israelites have gathered to again fight the Philistines. And all of Israel is, they're seeing the horses and the chariots and all the men. And they're really intimidated by that. But then there's Jonathan. And Jonathan stands out from all the rest. It's just him and his armor bearer, but he is willing to go up and attack a group of Philistines. This ends up being a battle in which 2 defeat 20. Do you see some real similarities between Jonathan and David? Do you see both of them having this real trust in God? And I want to suggest they did not trust God because they knew how this was going to end. They didn't trust God because it made sense to human reasoning. I mean, human reasoning doesn't allow me to think very confidently that two of us are going to take on 20. Now, there are some men out there I'm looking at now that I trust you a lot. I think a lot of you. Some of you are big and strong and I would be, you know, feel confident in certain situations with you. But there's not a man sitting out there that said, come on, there's 20 and me and you are going to take them down. I'm not going. Okay? And then you think about David and Goliath. That doesn't make any sense, does it? Where you've got the young shepherd boy and he's got a handful of stones and a sling and he's going to take down the 10-foot giant. Do you see the similarities between the two? They're looking beyond their own reasoning and they're putting their faith and their trust in God. And so I want to suggest that one element of a godly friendship is that we make ourselves faithful people. That when people see me, they see me trust God, whether things are good or bad. That will make me a good, godly friend. And that's the kind of friend that I need. The kind of friend that I know is going to trust God in the good and in the bad. Let me move on to a second thing here, and that is selfless. Being selfless. I think it is easy when we think about relationships and maybe think specifically about friendships. It's kind of easy to think in those in terms of what do I get out of it? You maybe think that sometimes. We evaluate our friendships. Maybe we have had some friendships in the past that we don't have anymore. And maybe it's because we evaluated it and we didn't really get much out of it. Or maybe what we were getting was not good. Sometimes we have to move on from certain friendships, don't we? But I want to suggest, even though it is okay to think about what I might get out of a relationship, if I want to be a true godly friend, guess where my focus really needs to be? It doesn't need to be solely on what I get. It needs to be about what I can give to the other person. Can I take you back to 1 Samuel chapter 18 again? That was where our reading came from. But I want to draw your attention not to just the tension that's building between David and Saul, but I want to take you back to what Jonathan is doing in the midst of this. Do you remember how it says Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself? And then it goes on to say in verse 4 that Jonathan strips himself of the robe that was on him, gave it to David with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. Jonathan is not doing a closet clean out here. This is not just getting rid of some stuff that I don't use anymore or I don't want anymore. You understand what this armor is symbolic of. This robe and this armor was symbolic of position. And guess who was supposed to be the king? Well, it was Jonathan, right? Jonathan was the heir to the throne. Now, can you imagine you are awaiting to take the throne? And then suddenly, well, one day you find out, it becomes evident that the throne that you are the rightful heir to, it's not coming to you anymore. It's coming to somebody else. It's coming to David. How do you think you feel towards David if this is happening to you? I will tell you, it would not surprise me if Jonathan had some feelings of jealousy. And maybe even beyond that, do you think he might could have some feelings of anger? Some resentment? Some bitterness? I think we probably all experienced that to some capacity. Not that any of us were going to be crowned as a king and we ended up having that swept out from under us. But all of us have kind of looked towards something or hoped for something and then somebody else got it and we had some negative feelings right there. Maybe it's a job. Maybe it's a promotion. But we're all familiar with the idea of I'm getting this. And then somebody else gets it. And we know the kind of feelings we would have to fight off. But do you see this incredible friendship with Jonathan? Even though something incredibly important, something major in his life is not going his way, guess what? He's still a friend to. He's still a friend of David. And not only is he a friend of David, he is going to do what David needs. And do you know why he's doing all of that? It's because he knows what the will of God is. Jonathan knows what the will of God is. And that's what he's operating from. And so I suggest that's the kind of friend that you and I need to be. We need to be operating within the will of God from that point of view. And that's the kind of friend that we need as well. This goes beyond, though, just David or Jonathan giving this over. Notice in chapter 20, verse 30. Notice how much tension actually rises now. Then Saul's anger burned against Jonathan and said to him, "You son of a perverse and rebellious woman, do I not know that you're choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor the kingdom will be established. Therefore now send and bring him to me, for he must surely die." But Jonathan answered Saul, his father, and said to him, "Why should he be put to death? What has he done?" Jonathan is not only having to deal with the feelings of having this kingdom taken away from him, he's having to deal with his very own father ridiculing him and rebuking him and saying, "You should want David dead. If there's anybody that should want David dead, it's you." And so we're forced to have to deal with this situation and see how Jonathan remains faithful, not just to God, but he remains a faithful friend to David. And that's what we need to have. Let me give you a third characteristic of godly friends, and that is inspirational. Again, time doesn't permit us to talk about these stories in detail. But you can maybe remember back to that story of David and Goliath where all the Israelite army was afraid. They're just cowering down in fear. Nobody's willing to step up. Nobody's willing to go into battle. But do you remember what happened when Goliath the giant fell? That was inspirational to the rest of the army. That was a shot of energy for them. They were very rejuvenated. And so they get up and now they go and they fight. They had been inspired by David. And I think the same thing is true of Jonathan. In 1 Samuel chapter 14 and verse 7, Jonathan is talking to his armor bearer. Notice what he says here. His armor bearer said to him, "Do all that is in your heart, turn yourself, and here I am according to your desire." Here is a young man that is by the side of Jonathan and he has been inspired. He says, "Jonathan, if you are willing to do this, I'm right here by your side." And so do you see in both David and Jonathan, they have that inspirational quality where they're both operating by faith. Here are two men who both trust God. And because they trust God, they're inspiring others to put their faith in God. And I'll tell you why I think this inspirational thing is important. Two reasons, really. One reason is unfortunate as it is, maybe we recognize that even in the church, sometimes we are going to be surrounded by people who are not very inspirational. We're going to be surrounded by people who are not encouragers, but discouragers. Sometimes we're going to be surrounded by people who are kind of wanting to go the wrong direction. Paul writes in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 That among the church there are going to be some who are weak, some who are faint-hearted, and some who are unruly. Which tells me that sometimes that's kind of what we're surrounded by. And so it occurs to me how valuable it is to find a person that we can draw from and work together with. But I'll give you that second reason. Not only do we need inspirational people when maybe lots of other people don't really want to move forward, we need inspirational people because sometimes my own weakness demands that's what I need in my life. James also says that someone who turns us from the error of our way, that can cover a multitude of sins. And so I suggest that you and I need the kind of friend in our life who will tell us what we need to hear. Not what we want to hear. We live in a world in which it is popular to preserve feelings. We live in a world in which it is popular to not say anything that would upset someone or damage the relationship. But I will tell you, that is not what real love is it? James says when somebody has taken a bad path and you go to them and turn them back, you have covered a multitude of sins. You very well may be saving the soul of that person. And I suggest that you and I need friends that are willing to say what they need to say to save our soul. There may be times where I venture off the path, where my life is not God-centered anymore, and I need that person that can just say, hey, I see what you're doing. You're going down a bad path and you need to come back. Do you see the value of having inspirational people in our lives? How that will help us maintain godliness? And then let me give you the last thing. And then it is this idea of being inseparable. 1 Samuel chapter 20 is kind of this tearful goodbye. Notice in verse 42, Jonathan said to David, "Go in safety, inasmuch as we have sworn to each other in the name of the Lord, saying, 'The Lord will be between me and you, and between my descendants and your descendants forever.'" Then he rose and departed while Jonathan went into the city. This is right after Saul has proven without a doubt he wants to kill David. And so now David and Jonathan are separating here. And you see this bond, and you see the difficulty that this separation is going to provide. And I take that to give us an opportunity to think about how we need the kinds of friends that we are so closely and deeply bonded with that not having that friend in our life is a big deal. You know, I have been a part of a congregation. I guess every congregation it's happened in this congregation, it's happened in all. But I've seen people who have worshiped at a congregation for years, and then one day they decide they're going to move to another congregation. Now, that is not wrong. There may be good reasons for that. And so when somebody says we're going to worship in another place, I just assume they're doing it for their spiritual welfare, and I hope that that's a good decision for them. But I did happen to know a lady one time in a congregation where I was. She had been there for years. And one day she just decided she was going to worship at another place. And so to my knowledge, she never said anything to anybody. She just had the elders announce it maybe the following Sunday that this person is not going to be worshiping with us anymore. They're going to go to another place. I just assumed she was looking for better preaching. And she probably found that wherever she went. But I will tell you what really stuck out to me. There seemed to be a real lack of relationship there, doesn't there? Does that sound odd to you? That you could have been a part of a congregation for years, and when you get ready to leave, there's not even a goodbye? I don't see much of a bond there, do you? I don't see much of a friendship there. And when I see that, I'm not talking about sinful things, but I am wondering if she were in deep trouble, who is she closely connected with that would help her? Who is going to be there that she has let in close enough that they can be a real inspiration to her? But again, that's not limited to one person, not limited to one congregation. That's something that happens over and over again. And when I see that, I can't help but wonder, where's the connection? And so as we wrap this up, thinking about being godly friends, I want us to form the kinds of relationships with each other that strengthen us and inspire us like none other. I hope we have good families that inspire us to be godly. And we have a good congregation. This is a great congregation. I just was reminded of that this past week when I was out of town. I was preaching at another place, and it's not an indictment on that congregation. But I will tell you, it reminded me that back home there is an incredible congregation that I'm glad to be a part of. Because there are lots of godly people here, and there are lots of people doing good things here. And I appreciate that. And so I want to suggest that being part of a good family and being part of a good congregation is incredible. But I want to suggest that even within the congregation, there may be some friendships that inspire us and strengthen us more than anything else. You know, Jesus taught that principle about you may have to leave family for the sake of being a disciple. And I think Jonathan shows us that. Here's his father, not at all godly, and Jonathan shows us he elevated the relationship that was the better relationship. And so think about that. Here's the takeaway. Find this friend and be this friend. That's simple enough, isn't it? Find this kind of friend and be this kind of friend. I want you to have people in your life that you show them faithfulness to God is more important than everything else. I want you to be the kind of friend that gives even when it costs you something. I want you to be the kind of friend that in a world full of complainers, in a world full of weaknesses, you are the inspiration. I want you to be the kind of friend that it would be hard to live without. That's the kind of friend you need to be. You need to be the kind of friend that would be hard for a godly person to live without. And so that's what I want to inspire you with this morning as we think about the relationship that God has given us and the value to those relationships. Now, let me say, this lesson has really been all about adding to our godliness. But there may be somebody here listening this morning who is not a godly person to start with. That doesn't mean you're a terrible person. What it would mean is that you haven't made God the center of your life. And maybe this morning is the time that you are ready to do that. You are ready to come and say, I'm going to make God everything in my life. I'm willing to make Jesus the Lord of my life. I'm going to be baptized so that all my past sins can be forgiven. And I'm going to leave here living for them. Maybe you've done that before and you have got off center. And maybe you know that and maybe you need to come back. This morning is a wonderful opportunity for that. And so here's what I would leave you with. If in some way, for some reason, your life is not right with God. Remember, Peter said, one day all of this is coming to an end. And when that happens, you need to be found godly. If you had it all come to an end right now and you wouldn't be found godly, let us help you with that. You can come to the front as we stand and sing.